What a phenomenal day in the history of this great community as the Golden One Center officially opening for business with the ribbon-cutting ceremony today. And former NBA Commissioner David Stern was there. David Stern, so instrumental in keeping the Sacramento Kings in this city. Many dignitaries on hand, including Mayor Kevin Johnson, of course, Sacramento Kings owner Vivek Ranadive, and many members of his ownership group. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal time to be out at the Golden One Center on a beautiful fall morning. And then we proceeded inside to what is an incredible venue. And I got to tell you, walking into the Golden One Center through the open aircraft hangar doors was kind of like, wow. And I had been in the arena a week ago, and so I got a chance to see it. But my wife, she had not seen it until today, and she was absolutely blown away, as were many others, at the beauty and the design of the Golden One Center. It is truly spectacular. It is so open. It is incredible to be able to walk around the concourse and be able to see right through to the other side of the arena, be able to see the floor, be able to see everyone. It is a phenomenal design, and I think that you'll see for yourself when you get in. They had the 4K scoreboard lit up with videos. It's spectacular. It really is. It is absolutely spectacular. I can't wait for so many of you to see it. But I will tell you that today, really, and I said this on the drive when I was with Dave, Katie, and Nate yesterday. What this Golden One Center means to me, it's a symbol. It's a symbol of this great community. It's a symbol of all of the people that worked to make today a reality. When I look at the Golden One Center, I think of the grassroots efforts. I think of the local businesses. I think of the local owners. You know, I'm talking about the people that stepped forward first when Mayor Kevin Johnson said, okay, you know, we're going to do this. And so many people said, I'm in. And they were all in. And there were so many people behind the scenes, so many people that were working almost around the clock to make this thing happen, despite all the roadblocks, despite all the hurdles. They never stopped. They never stopped. And all the people that pledged to buy season tickets, all the people that bought tickets, all the people, you know, that showed up at the city hall meetings, all the people that did their part to keep this team here in Sacramento. And as David Stern said today, it's really not just about the Sacramento Kings. You know, it's about so much more, because there are going to be so many events that are going to be at that beautiful new facility, and we're all able to share in it. And so the day has arrived, and now when the calendar turns tomorrow to October, Paul McCartney will be the first event coming up on Tuesday and then again on Wednesday. And so I thank everyone that made this day possible. Even if you just bought one ticket when you couldn't afford a ticket to go to a game when we really need to show support, whether you went and pledged, you know, on Here We Pledge or Here We Buy. And I'll never forget the day that I was doing my show and the mayor had said that they needed, you know, 10,000 people to pledge for season tickets. And I'll never forget doing the show and talking about the website. And I think it was, what, herewebuy.org. And I remember being on the radio looking at the donations and the pledges coming, not donations, the pledges coming in. And I remember saying that I thought I was at a gas station, you know, looking at the gas pump as I was filling my car. That's how fast the pledges were coming in. Well, that's what Sacramento's all about. And David Stern made it again known what he thinks about Sacramento, how he felt that the fans in this community were as good as anywhere else in the entire country, and that this was truly a special NBA community with a special fan base. And it was just remarkable to be able to sit there and listen to that great man while the hotel condominium project was still under construction, not too far from where we were all sitting. We're watching the cranes, you know, going up and down with, you know, heavy equipment as they continue to add on to that hotel and condominium project, and all the workers in their yellow vests in their hard hats, some who had stopped to take in the ceremony from their perch on the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th floor, whatever the case may be. It was quite a day, and I'm honored to be sitting here on this Friday of 2016 talking about what I think is the most amazing arena that I've ever been in. And I don't say that because I'm the TV announcer for the Kings. I say that because that's what I believe. This venue is absolutely spectacular. And you'll see for yourself when you get in there for the first time. So it was just phenomenal. And I'm blessed to be able to be a part of this whole thing. It's incredible. All right. We got a lot of things that we're going to talk about today. Final weekend in baseball. And that means for the Giants, the Dodgers are in town for three games. Now, when you look at the standings right now, with three games left, the Washington Nationals have 66 losses and the Dodgers have 68. It's unlikely that the Dodgers are going to catch the Nationals. And so for that reason, it looks like the Nats are going to host the NLDS against the Dodgers. Now, if the Nationals should lose their game tonight at home against Miami, and the Dodgers beat the Giants tonight, then maybe we've got a different weekend of baseball. But I don't think the Dodgers are going to play this weekend the way they normally would. I don't see that. I the Dodgers, they don't care whether the Giants are in the playoffs or not. That's not their goal. They won the American League, the National League West. They're playing the Nationals. They don't care about the Giants. You know, Dave Roberts is going to manage his team so that his team is best prepared to play when the NLDS starts. So I'm not, you know, all these people, oh, gee, it's a rivalry. Let me tell you something. The Dodgers don't care about a rivalry with the Giants right now, okay? There's not one player on the Dodgers that's thinking, oh, my gosh, we're playing the Giants and this is a great rivalry, so we have to beat them. That doesn't go on, all right? That's not the way players think. Fans may think that. That's not the way players think. Now, are they going to go out and intentionally lose? No, they're not going to go out and intentionally lose, but they're not going to go out of their way to win these games. They're just not. The Mets, a game lead over the Giants. The Mets, a two-game lead over the Cardinals. And, of course, the Cardinals won back of San Francisco. Now, there's a lot of talk about what happened last night at the end of the Cincinnati-St. Louis game when the game was tied in the bottom of the ninth, two outs, a runner on first, and Molina hits a rope to left field. And I don't know if you've ever seen Busch Stadium, but the wall ends, or I should say the fence ends, the padded fence, and then right behind it is a wall with billboards on it, all right? And so what happened last night was that the ball bounced, went over the fence, and bounced against the billboard right behind the fence, okay? None of the umpires saw the ball bounce over the fence, thus it should have been a ground rule double. The left fielder for the Cincinnati Reds did not know that the ball had bounced over the fence. He didn't raise his arms in any fashion to signal the umpires, hey, this ball's out of play. The center fielder for the Reds didn't motion in any way, shape, or form that the ball should have been dead and it should have been a ground rule double. Thus, instead of the winning run scoring from first, it should have been second and third with two outs. This is where the controversy comes in, all right? And it's really not a controversy if you know the rule. On a play that ends the game, any replay challenge must occur immediately. The request has to occur immediately, all right? So that means as the winning run crosses and is safe, the manager, in this case, Manager Price for the Cincinnati Reds, must come out onto the top step of the dugout, signal to the umpire that he is requesting a replay. All right, so what happened last night, the umpires did not see the ball bounce above the in-play fence up against the wall with the billboard on it, nor did anybody else on the Cincinnati Reds, because the Reds were walking off the field and the Red players that were in the locker room started going into their clubhouse, including the manager, Price. So the game ends. The Cardinals are celebrating the walk-off, and the umpires walk off the field, as they do every night. After 35 seconds, the manager of the Reds realizes that that ball now should have been a ground rule double. He walks onto the field, looks for the umpires who have already vacated the field, and goes towards the umpire room and was notified by the crew chief, Bill Miller, that your request is invalid because it has to come immediately upon the conclusion of the play. So you got a couple of issues here. First issue is we all want to get it right. The umpires obviously want to get it right. The umpires don't like to make mistakes. It bothers them. That's number one. Number two, the replay system is in place for these type of situations. And I'm wondering if in this next offseason, all plays to end a game will be reviewed in New York before a game is official, so that on any game-winning play, it's an automatic review that would prevent this type of deal. Now, you may ask, well, gee, how come the umpires didn't see it? Well, the same way I would say no one on the Reds saw it either. There was nobody on the Reds signaling, hey, we need to get this reviewed. Not one player on the Cincinnati Reds, including the left fielder, who was 15 feet from the ball, you know, said anything to the umps. No one. The manager Price of the Reds did not know that the ball had bounced off. It's very, very difficult to see with the naked eye. The way the stadium is constructed, it is very difficult to see that. So, you know, the reality is we all want to get it right. The umpires want to get it right. Major League Baseball wants to get it right. The teams want to get it right. But in this particular instance, the manager of the Cincinnati Reds made a huge mistake, because it should be absolutely automatic on a play like that to end a game. You ask for an automatic review. It's automatic. Happens all the time. You know, you can't wait 35 seconds and then try to find the umpires who've already left the field. And it's not like the umpires sprinted off the field. If you watch the replay, and I've watched it numerous times, the Reds players were almost completely off the field. There were a couple of, I believe, the center fielder and the right fielder were just crossing the third baseline, heading into the dugout, and you could see the umpires right off the third baseline, still on the field, walking, not running, towards their exit door, which is behind home plate. All right? So it's not like the game ended and the umpires, you know, decided to sprint off the field. That did not happen. And here's the other deal. According to what I read today on the MLB.com website, Bill Miller stated that he looked into the Reds' dugout and there had been no eye contact and no signal in any way, shape, or form that the manager of the Cincinnati Reds was going to ask for a replay. At that point in time, the four umpires had no idea that the ball was out of play and should have been a ground rule double. They didn't know. They assumed that it was a ball that hit off the fence, was in play, and the winning run scored. There was no trigger mechanism. There was no, like, you know, they didn't get together and say, had one of the umpires said, I think that ball is out of play, they would have stayed on the field. The Reds would have then challenged, and they would have gotten a review. That didn't happen. The umpires didn't realize that the ball had bounced over the fence against the sign, which technically is out of play, which should have been a ground rule double. You know, people are saying, well, the Giants got screwed here. Giants didn't get screwed. The Giants screwed themselves by playing horrible baseball in the second half. And here's the other deal. Who's to say that if they called it a ground rule double and they're second and third with two out, that the next guy up for the Cardinals doesn't get a hit? Who's to say that if the game goes an extra innings, that the Cardinals don't win it anyway? So we don't know who would have won the game had it been called the ground rule double. I think you'll see a system where at the end of games, all winning plays are reviewed. Somebody just texted me, I think the center fielder probably has the best angle on that ball. That's on him. Totally agree. You're right. I think that would be the best angle, because the left fielder, you know, he's not sitting there at that point in time thinking about where the ball is. His his thought process is, I've got to get this ball as quickly as I can and try to get the runner, who's in all likelihood his back's to the play, is trying to make, you know, the winning run, and I got to hit my cutoff man, and they got to make the relay. He's not thinking at that point in time. But I think you made a great point right there. All right? I think they make a great point. It is the center field. Someone said, hey, Grant, it's the ump's job to see the ball hit above the fence. They screwed it up. It is their job. Okay? It is their job. You're right. And it's their job. That's what they're on the field for. But they didn't see it. And you can't call something you didn't see. And generally, their trigger mechanism for a play like that is the outfielder extending his arms in the air. That didn't happen. And here's the other deal. You know, it's not like the second baseman for the Reds or the shortstop for the Reds or anyone else said anything to the umpires as they were walking off the field. There wasn't one member on the field of the Cincinnati Reds that thought that that was a ground rule double. So I'm thinking, okay, the four umpires missed it, and so did every member of the player, every member of the Reds. So that tells me it's really, really difficult to see the ball bouncing over the fence against the wall. That's what that tells me. Somebody says, Grant, you were wrong. He was told he had 10 seconds to challenge the play. He has to challenge the play immediately. The rules are different for the end of the game. Had he waited 10 seconds, the crew chief, Bill Miller, would have granted him a replay. All right? 10 seconds is not very long. Okay? Bill Miller and the umpiring crew are still on the field at that point in time. Okay? I'm sure that Bill Miller, you know, the crew chief, would not have looked at Price and said, you know what, you came out in 8 seconds, so I'm not going to grant you the replay. Period. Someone said, but during the sixth inning, you can challenge 35 or 40 seconds later, the Giants got screwed. Here's the deal. The rule is the rule. I don't make the rules. The umpires don't make the rules. The managers don't make the rules. But every manager in baseball should know the rule. On a game-ending play, the rule book reads, not 10 seconds, not 30 seconds, the rule reads that a challenge must come immediately, all right? Immediately. That did not happen last night. That did not happen. Somebody says the outfield umpire missed a call. He knows where the fence is. They don't have outfield umpires in the regular season. Had it been a postseason, you're right. The outfield umpire would have been right there and would have had a very clear look at it. They don't have outfield umpires in the regular season. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. So here's the deal. If the Giants feel they got screwed, they need to go out and win some games. All right? They've been pathetic in the second half of the season. They got no one to blame but themselves. All right, coming up on the show today, Joe Theismann. We'll talk about the quarterback play in the NFL at 3:32. Sarah Ellison from BaltimoreRavens.com at 4:32. We'll talk with Rick Gosselin, the Cowboys insider, as we preview the Cowboys and the 49ers. Then we're going to talk about the big college football games, one tonight, including the Stanford-Washington game. But, of course, everyone's looking at Louisville-Clemson tomorrow. Phil Harrison from collegefootballnews.com, he'll talk to us about that. All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Somebody says, Grant, I think you meant the Cards got screwed, not the Giants. Cards didn't get screwed. They won the game. How did they get screwed? They won the game. Somebody said, Grant, the bottom line is this is why we have replay in the first place. They need to get this right. I totally agree. You're right. Absolutely agree. They do need to get it right. That's why you do have a replay. There needs to be a better system in place so that this type of thing can't happen again. You're absolutely right. Somebody says, why not challenge if the game is over? What do you have to lose? Only have something to gain. That's my point exactly. The manager of the Cincinnati Reds absolutely dropped the ball here. It's completely on him. It's like managing 101. End of game, winning run. I'm just going to call for a replay challenge. Happens all the time. Somebody says, Grant, nobody knows the rule and makes no sense. First of all, the umpires know the rule. That's their job. And all the managers in baseball, I think, know the rule. And if they don't, they should know the rule. And if they don't know the rule, then they're not doing their job properly. So I totally disagree with you. That's not accurate. All right. I want your lock of the week. I want your upset of the week. The Raiders on the road taking on Baltimore. The 49ers at home against the Dallas Cowboys. So, again, I want your lock of the week. I want your upset of the week. And I also want someone to educate Joakim Noah of the New York Knicks, who skipped a team dinner at the West Point Military Academy that featured cadets and a speech by a former colonel because he is against the war. He says, I have a lot of respect for the kids who are out here fighting, but it's hard for me to understand why we have to go to war, why kids have to kill kids around the world. Here's the deal, Joakim. Do you want to live in a society where there's no military? Do you want to live in the United States of America where we don't have a strong military? What do you think that would be like? I'll tell you what it would be like. You would have no freedom. You would have no freedom. You know what? Saying that you don't like the war is one thing, because I don't know anybody that does like the war. Okay? I think if you took a poll of all of our troops around the world, they would say they don't like the war either. I don't know of anyone that likes war. I don't know anyone that likes the thought of war. I really don't. But I mean, so you're going to boycott going to a dinner at the West Point Military Academy because you don't understand why kids have to kill kids around the world? I don't think anyone understands why you have to go to war, why war is the way it is. But I mean, really? What do you want to live in a society where you don't have any military? That would be great, huh? Amazing. Incredible. Listen, everyone's free to do what they want in this country, but I got to tell you, this one, Joakim Noah, boy, oh boy, I think he really, 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 really dropped the ball on this one. That's about as bad as it gets. All right, tell you what we'll do. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. The Grant Napier Show will continue. We'll talk NFL football with Joe Theismann. That's coming up next. Well, normally when I talk to Joe Theismann, we are sitting on the driving range at beautiful Edgewood, and we're talking about, you know, how beautiful it is and everything. But now I'm with Joe Theismann. He's on the East Coast. He's on a phone, and here I am. Joe, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I love talking to you, but I wish we were in Tahoe.
I agree with you, Grant. You know, it's got to be beautiful this time of year. My wife and I have sort of promised ourselves that we want to get out there sometime other than when the tournament is there. Just because I love Lake Tahoe and I love that whole area out there.
Joe, it's always great to have you on. And again, I really appreciate it as we are with you here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Joe, let's talk about the Redskins. I mean, they pretty much saved their season. I don't know if you bounce back from 0-3. That was one gritty win that they had against the Giants on Sunday.
It really was. And you know, it's just they're capable of being a good football team if they don't make mistakes, but they just can't afford the luxury of too many penalties or making mistakes at the wrong time. I mean, I think you can say that about a lot of football. You could say it about the Raiders. You could say it about a lot of football teams, but to be 1-2 sort of keeps you in the conversation. To be 0-3, now you become an afterthought.
Joe, why is it that we're seeing more and more young quarterbacks have success, whereas when you played and even the next generation of quarterbacks, it was almost unheard of for a first-year quarterback to play well? We see Carson Wentz and what he's doing. We see Prescott and what he's doing. It's just unbelievable. Give me your thoughts on that.
I think the systems liken a little bit to the college. So, you know, when I got into professional football, you sort of had to adjust to a game. It was a little bit of a different philosophy on offense. We ran the football a little bit more predominantly, and you sort of threw to keep the chains going, and then you took shots. Today, you know, if you know, you're throwing 40, 43 times a game, and everybody's coming at us out of the gun out of college. So when you wind up in the gun at the professional level, it's not an unfamiliar situation for you. Plus, we never went 4 and 5 wides. I mean, you go empty today. If you try and bring pressure, if the kid's halfway decent, he's going to get the ball out of your hands. Now all of a sudden you're one-on-one and you're looking at 60, 70-yard plays. So the defensive coaches have to be a little bit more reluctant. And I think in the case of Carson Wentz, Philadelphia could have – I don't know where they're ranked right now, Grant, but I guarantee you it's probably a top 3 or 4 defense.
That's right.
And so, you know, in Dallas, it's a little bit of a different story. The Redskins were better than the Dallas Cowboys as a team. They did not play better that day. I think Dallas's secondary is very, very, very average. I think the Cowboys, once they run into some really good football teams, as time moves on, it's going to be a bit more of a challenge for them. I think the best team right now in the NFC is the Philadelphia Eagles. They're a more complete football team right now at this stage. So, you know, you look at the young guys. Everybody says, well, he came out of a Division II school. It doesn't matter. If you got a brain in your head and you can throw the football and you're a good sized individual, you're gonna have a chance to play and be okay.
Was a great quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, he came from a Division III school, and I'm with you. Even back in your era when you played, hey, you either can play or you can't play, right? If you know how to play the game and you got the intellect to play quarterback, then you can play, correct?
Yeah, I think so. You need the mental makeup to be tough enough to be able to deal with it. I think that's the other thing. I've always believed that the single most important ingredient that a quarterback has to possess is mental toughness. Obviously, you have to throw the football and you have to have a brain, because it's not a dumb person's sport at all. There's a lot of thought that goes into every position. But you have to be tough mentally. You have to work through tough situations. And, you know, I think Carson's off to a great start, as is Dak. Both these young men are off to very positive starts, but there's 13 games to go. And, you know, you want to see how it moves. I think Doug Peterson's done a great job with Carson in Philadelphia. And Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan in Dallas have done a wonderful job. You know, Dallas has built one of the best offensive lines in football. They have Ezekiel Elliott, who's a terrific young back. They have Alfred Morris, who's a terrific young back. And Dak has, you know, he's got some pretty good wheels. I mean, he scored a 24-yard touchdown, a 27-yard touchdown in two of the three games. So you have to defend him a little bit differently than you do, say, a Carson Wentz.
We're talking with Joe Theismann here on the Grant Napier Show. You know, I'm going to ask you, when you look at last week, that win, I would imagine, has got to really help out Kirk Cousins' confidence. I mean, he did not play well that week before against Dallas. And a lot of, you know, I don't have to tell you, you know, when things are not going well in the nation's capital, people will come down on you hard. It's the National Football League. You're a quarterback. Do you think that, well, let me ask you, how much do you think that game last week is going to help him the rest of this season?
I think it not only helps him, but I think it helps Sean McVay, our offensive coordinator, because he called quite a few more runs in some unique situations. And you have to be sort of balanced. I mean, there's very few teams. The New England Patriots probably would be one team that you look at the run-pass ratio, and if you're going to run 60 plays, let's say, if you're 45-15, 45 passes, 15 runs, not going to hurt them as much, because of the veteran nature of the football team. And Bill Belichick's the best coach in football. So, you know, you've got that going for you as well. But I really feel like from Kirk's standpoint, he needed to just settle down and make some plays, which he did. He made some plays with his legs, but he had the support of a running game, which allows, you know, Sean to be able to call some play action. You change the launch point for him a little bit. You know, you move him around. You just can't, you know, very few guys can just drop back in a pocket and throw the football.
Joe, I want to ask you, when people talk about your career and they talk about, you know, the success that you had at Notre Dame, as somebody that meant so much to that program and as such, you know, let's face it, Fighting Irish through and through, how difficult is it to see what's going on with that football team right now?
It's tough. It is tough, but, you know, I think, whether it's professional football, collegiate football, however you look at it, you have a time when you have a lot of seniors, you have a time when there's guys in certain places that are playmakers, and you're going to make plays and you're going to do well. And there are other times where you sort of have to reload, and I think Notre Dame is reloading. I mean, with the suspensions they had before, you've got young players in the secondary. I felt like the only thing that really hurt Notre Dame against Michigan State and Texas was tackling. They just didn't tackle well. They had the Texas backs on fourth or third down situations. They had them bottled up, and they managed to convert. And then against Michigan State, it was a similar situation. Michigan State game was under control until you get a special teams mistake, then you get a fumble, and then all of a sudden now you have to change everything you're doing. You know, Notre Dame is not that far away. It's probably out of the conversation now for a national championship. But, you know, we've got a tough one at Syracuse up in New York, and then they've got Stanford coming up, Miami coming up, Southern California coming up. So, you know, Brian Kelly is a terrific teacher when things aren't going exactly the way you want. And that's what I really admire about him.
We're talking with Joe Theismann. Joe, the Cleveland Browns look like they're going to part ways with Josh Gordon. And I've been very adamant out here in California that, you know, Aldon Smith of the Raiders, I feel, should be cut too. And again, I think that, you know, at some point, enough is enough is enough. And I'm not saying I'm insensitive to people that have addictions or what have you, but this is the National Football League. And how many times can you let down your players that you play with? How many times can you let down your organization? How many times can you let down your fan base? And yet we see guys get chance after chance after chance after chance. And I, for one, I'm glad the Browns are going to part ways with Josh Gordon.
Well, you know, first of all, you know, Josh is going to check into a rehab center, and he should have a long time ago. I mean, the problems that this young man has go beyond football. And you have concerns about the person. Same thing with Aldon Smith. Here, Grant, here's what I think. I do not agree, and I say this vehemently, with the National Football League's policy on substance abuse. I don't agree with a lot of their disciplinary policies. But if you are a three-time offender, you have a bigger problem than playing professional football. Now, people will argue and say, well, if you keep them in that environment, it's safer. That's a big crock of baloney. To put on a uniform is a privilege. It's a privilege, and you earn privileges in life. And if you have a problem, you need to go get your problem treated. As a matter of fact, if you come in, this is what I think. If you come into the National Football League and you have a history of substance abuse, all right, a percentage of your salary should be put away so that if you need to go to rehab, you use your money to take care of yourself. But I think that the first time, you get a 4-game suspension. The second time, you get a year suspension. The third time, you forfeit the privilege to play professional football. There are too many people out there that don't have the problem, that can play the game, that can't play it, the place is being taken by someone who doesn't appreciate it. It's enough of this cowtailing to kids. For crying out loud, when are we going to get tough with all this stuff? That's
Amen.
The problem in society. We
Amen.
Kissing everybody's rear end.
Amen.
I agree with you 100%.
You know what? I'm very happy that you said that. We're talking with Joe Theismann. Joe, I got to tell you, in all the years that I've talked to you, I did not realize that you were drafted by the Minnesota Twins, and obviously you made the right decision, but do you ever wonder what type of baseball player you would have been?
Every now and then I think, you know, I was a shortstop. I was a skinny little shortstop, and I look at a lot of different shortstops around the league, and you know, that's about the way I was. I never played heavier in the National Football League more than 185 pounds. Probably would have been 175-pound shortstop, and I loved it. Baseball was always my first love. I still, you know, I go home tonight. A lot of guys put different. I put golf on and I put a baseball game on, and I sit and I watch. You know, I get the biggest kick out of. I love baseball. I think that a true lost art. I think that I say this, and it's the amount of money these guys make is great.
Right.
You know, it's absurd, but it's great.
Right.
Everybody's entitled. I believe in free enterprise. I don't believe in handouts, contrary to what our government believes. I believe that you have to earn things in this society. And I think, guys, if you're in a position to make a lot of money, good for you. But I promise you, if you were to put $1 million in a bucket at home plate, and you ask the outfielders, most of them in the National Football League, to throw the ball towards home plate, you wouldn't get 10% that would even come close.
Wow.
Check it out.
Yeah.
It's a lost art, being able to throw the ball from the outfield, whether it's to the cutoff guy or over the cutoff guy.
That's very true.
I mean, they throw it all over the ballpark. I laugh at it. I have the best time. I'm going, you know, here's a guy making – $10 million,
right, Right.
And he couldn't throw it into a garage door if it was open at home plate.
Well, that's
fun to watch.
You know what? That's very well said, because you know the two guys that come to mind that have arms that can throw anyone out are Puig and Cespedes. And when they do make that throw, you see it over and over and over again. But you don't see a lot of other players that can make throws like that.
Right.
You make a great point. You make a great point, Joe.
It's
always great having you on. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, we can do it again in the near future. And take care of yourself.
Anytime, give me a call, Grant. Great catching up with you.
Yep, likewise. That's Joe Theismann. Good stuff. We will come back. We'll take your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. This is the Grant Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHDK. Is there a team that has worse luck than the Philadelphia 76ers? The number one pick in the draft, Ben Simmons, fractured a bone in his right foot. He rolled his right ankle during the final scrimmage. X-rays and an MRI revealed the fracture in his fifth metatarsal bone of his right foot. It's just amazing the what happens to the Philadelphia 76ers seemingly year after year after year. Unbelievable. Unbelievable if you're a fan of the Philadelphia 76ers. And anytime I hear about a basketball player breaking a bone in his foot, that is like a major red flag. It's like, uh-oh, that, you know, break your arm, break your leg, you know, break your collarbone, but don't break a bone in your foot. Please don't break a bone in your foot. Man, that is unbelievable to me. Just terrible luck. No word on how long he will be out of action. Just terrible, though. Absolutely brutal. The Kings, meanwhile, continuing with their training camp right here in Sacramento, and they will be playing on Tuesday against the Lakers down in Anaheim, and then they'll be in San Jose on Thursday to take on the Golden State Warriors, and then they'll play their first preseason game here on the Monday the 10th. They will also have the final preseason game at the Golden 1 Center. Can't wait. And as I said, what a phenomenal day in the history of this city to witness the ribbon-cutting ceremony in front of the Golden 1 Center. Just incredible. What a great day. Let's get to Arnold. You're on with Grant Napier. Hello, Arnold.
Hey, Grant. First of all, before I say anything about the 76ers, you, sir, were part – you were very big and instrumental on the Kings staying here. So thank you very much for what you did. It was a community effort, but you came on and in many ways. You were the leader, along with Carmichael, Dave, and Vivek, and Kevin Johnson. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
76ers, I feel bad for Ben Simmons. I feel bad for the fans, but I don't feel bad for that organization. I don't agree with what their philosophy to get to the top. I understand, you know, that in the NBA, kind of need to be outside the box thinking, but in many ways, I almost feel as the basketball gods are kind of doing this to them because, you know, to me, Grant, one of the best draft, you know, stretches was the Oklahoma Thunder when they took Durant, Westbrook, and James Harden. And in many ways, James Harden, he had to mature, and part of the way he developed was by playing on a winning team. And, you know, general managers need guys who they can perceive as having value. To me, I don't see how you can continue to lose in the 76ers and somehow say, well, you know, we've got Embiid, we've got Noel, we've got Simmons, these have value. A general manager's going to look and say, well, I haven't seen much on the court. So I really want to see what happens 2 or 3 years down the line, see if are they able to cash in those guys for more picks or for some value. Because to me, if you're not winning, if you're not seeing the production, where's the value?
Arnold, thank you. Go ahead.
With it. Okay, and the last thing, Raiders and Baltimore, I think the Raiders win this one 21-17. 49ers, Dallas, I think Dallas wins it 24-13. Yeah, going, Grant.
Thank you, Arnold. You too. Appreciate it. Let's get to John. You're on with Grant Napier. Hi, John.
Mr. Grant Napier, I want to say you're very right about my man Jay Cutler. I called you a few weeks ago and trying to stick up for him, and I think my time sticking up for him is over.
Yeah, it should be over because he's not a good quarterback, and you're never going to win with him. It's the same thing I say about Arizona and Carson Palmer. You're never winning with Carson Palmer either, but you're definitely 100% not winning with Jay Cutler. Just not happening.
So what do you think the Bears should do? I mean, there's not really no one out there.
Nah, there's nothing they can do this year. I mean, this year is done. You know.
I hate
to say it when we're still, you know, technically in September, but if you're a Chicago Bears fan, their season's over. They're done.
Yes, sir. Also, I know you watched a little bit of the practices, haven't you? The Sacramento Kings.
Yes. About what's your question? I'm sorry.
So I like the pace that Jaeger's making right now. As far as, you know, when Carl came in, it was go, and Jaeger got kind of a learning curve that he's enforcing, you know, per se. Do you see him being loud and really instructional on the practice court?
To be honest with you, I'm not in the facility during those portions of practice, so I can't state how he conducts himself with his team. But I know that he is heard. That much I do know, and that he's in complete control, and that from what I'm hearing, you know, he's got the respect right off the get-go from all of his players. Like, that is not an issue, and that was not the case last year. So I'm really happy with that. I've heard that the practices are very hard and very competitive, but fun, and that the players are extremely receptive to what's gone on in the first week. All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Coming up at 4:32, we'll preview the Baltimore Ravens with Sarah Ellison. She's from BaltimoreRavens.com. I don't know what to make of the Ravens. They're 3-0. They did not look good in their three wins. Offensively, they're not very good. They have no running game. They have a good defense. They're getting Elvis Dumervil back. I just don't have a real good read on the Baltimore Ravens. The Raiders in the air as we speak, heading to Baltimore for the game on Sunday. All right, we have got the first hour in the books. We're going to come right back, get you rolling with more of your phone calls. The Grant and Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHDK.